All right, I'm going. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Very well. Enjoying the last few days before the preseason starts, and the Raptors are still considered champions, which nobody remembers.
Yeah, they'll be champions until the end of the year.
Yeah, but it won't be brought up for the rest of the year as soon as the regular season starts.
Nah, man, don't you remember last year the Cavs were the reigning Eastern Conference champions?
Yeah, for about 2 days until Tristan Thompson claimed that they were still the champs and they had to be dethroned when they were playing like the Raptors and the Celtics.
You had to ruin it for everybody there. Banger in the paint, Rajan Dwalia, how you feeling?
I'm doing good. Same feeling as Josh. The NBA season's coming around, and it's an exciting time.
When does preseason start?
I believe it's on Friday. I think that Houston's playing a team out in Japan or China.
Oh,
I think
the 27th. You think? Oh, this isn't coming out until like the 30th. So, so by now preseason will have started. How about that?
No, I think Josh is jumping the gun a bit. It's next Friday. It's the first week of October.
Nope, that is incorrect. We're both wrong, actually. It's the 30th of September, which is a Monday.
Which is when this podcast comes out. So
there you go. The Rockets are playing SDS. Whoever that is.
Okay.
All right, if you want to call that preseason, sure.
I got my money on the Rockets that game. I'm just saying.
There's a lot of games like that this preseason. I looked at the schedule. There's a lot of like international teams that are playing these NBA teams. So it's not going to be very fun to watch if you actually
end up diving. The brand is building, man. NBA going international. All right, let's get it started. So today we're going to do... how would you describe this? Whose island you're still on? Who you're high on? Who you're low on? Basically guys who we either think that are really overrated, guys who we're low on, obviously, or who we're high on, guys that don't get enough love. Maybe someone who we think is going to pop off this year. Raj, why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, I'm going to start off with a player that I think hasn't got enough credit. And I think this year he's going to do really well, especially because even though his role might be reduced, I think he's going to be very efficient in that role. If you guys want to take a guess, he's actually moved teams this offseason. He was involved in a trade. He's in the Eastern Conference, plays shooting guard. Yes,
Josh
that
Richardson.
Is the person who I'm actually very high on. I think he's going to have a great year. I think he fits that team very well, and Philly needs outside shooting because I don't think they're going to rely on Ben Simmons' new discovered shot. He had a great year in Miami. He took some big strides. I think that went kind of under the radar with the whole Wade farewell tour. And this year, I think he's going to have less touches, but I think he'll be really efficient with his touches. And he's not one of the big three on that team with Embiid, Simmons, Horford, and Tobias Harris. Like, he's really like the fifth option. But I think he's going to put up great numbers. I don't think he's going to make the All-Star team, but I think he's going to be a player that a lot of teams will not game plan for, and he's going to put up a big year.
Yeah, one of the key things for him is just, like, he's got to be there defensively every game, right? That team's perimeter defense is pretty lacking with just Simmons out there now. And then, like, who do they have off the bench? It's pretty shallow at this point.
Well, they still...
They have a bunch of young guys for the most part.
And then add in Mike Scott.
Mike Scott without his new headband, basically.
Yeah, yeah, now that it's banned. But yeah, no.
Yeah.
They lost their captain, though, TJ McConnell.
Okay. Sorry. That's a weird reference to have. Yeah, they're going to be very reliant on him just for any perimeter usage at this point.
Yeah, especially without Redick in the fold. Like, Josh Richardson is by far going to take the most three-pointers for that team, unless Embiid decides to really start chucking them up like he did last year. But I really do think that he's going to be in a reduced role in the sense that he's not going to be obliged to do as much to carry the team. And because he had to have such a big workload in Miami, I think he's going to be very efficient. They're going to put him in good positions, and especially considering Simmons isn't really considered a scoring guard, I think Richardson can put up numbers similar to Miami with less usage, so he'll be a very efficient player.
Yeah, Richardson actually got a chance last year to run pick and roll with Miami, and he actually did pretty well in the early part of the year, and then teams sort of started to figure him out later on in the year. And then with his shot release, it's not as quick as J.J. Redick's, obviously, but as you mentioned, he's going to get much more open looks. So he is going to be a more efficient player this year, but again, the question with Philly is obviously, like, is he going to be that guy at the end of the game that ends up running pick and roll, or who's going to be that guy? Is it going to be Tobias Harris? So they got to figure that part out, but I do agree that Richardson probably will take another bump up in terms of his efficiency.
As a primary threat on the perimeter, do you think he'll actually get that many open looks? Because if I were any other defense, I would just zero in on one guy on the perimeter. So have like one primary defender out there and then just pack the paint against everyone else. Not really concerned about Horford or Embiid lighting you up for that much on the outside.
I think Horford can. Horford's a pretty reliable shooter, and then Tobias Harris is going to be the other guy in the starting lineup. So I think they have just enough shooting to where guys like Richardson will be able to get open looks off Embiid and Simmons crashing in the lane.
Yeah, I think Philly's like a long team, and we talked about like their starting five, and yeah, they don't have the depth, but I really do think Richardson's going to be used like not as a primary option. So teams are really going to try to limit like Embiid's touches, prevent Simmons from getting inside the paint, and even if he does, like he'll have the option to kick it out. So I do think Richardson's going to get more open looks, and comparing kind of his role on Miami and Philly, like he went from being like the primary guy in Miami to now being like the fifth option in Philly. So that jump is a lot in terms of like reduced role, but I think he's gonna do very well in terms of just being efficient, hitting his shots. Like he didn't shoot the ball particularly well from three last year, like I think around 34, 35%. But I think this year I think he's gonna put up better numbers than Tobias Harris, to be honest. I think he,
Wow, that's a scorcher right there, man.
yeah, I think he will because like he'll have just better looks than Tobias would. So yeah, that's my hot take, or that's the player that I'm really high on.
All right, let's move on. Josh, how about yours?
My first candidate for guys whose island I'm still on is Luke Kennard. So
Big
with
money.
Kennard, he's gonna have a much bigger role going into the season, sort of like Richardson. I think he's gonna handle the ball a lot more. I don't think Reggie Jackson's gonna be as involved in pick and roll type sets. I think Kennard's gonna be that guy that ends up in the starting five at the shooting guard position, and he'll be running a lot more pick and roll. He actually played pretty well in the postseason in the games that nobody was watching against the Bucks, but he put up some pretty good stats, and he's a really good shooter. And off the pick and roll, he's actually pretty smart. He sort of reminds me of Joe Ingles.
High praise.
That's really high praise.
I mean, the guy shot 39% from three last year on four attempts, so that's pretty good. And I think those attempts are going to go up this year with him, running a lot more actions and probably, just being more involved in the offense overall.
They're going to need him since he's like their primary perimeter threat, too, similar to Richardson. Because I'm not really reliant on Reggie Jackson hitting outside shots in Detroit. Or Bruce Brown, Bruce Bowen, Bruce Brown, whatever his name is. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I think that's one guy who might end up being out of the starting lineup, or they're just going to go small-ish on the wing because Brown's a pretty good defensive player, even though he's only like 6'5". But I think they need Kennard shooting and creativity in the starting lineup since Jackson's not a guy you can really rely on to give you any type of consistent effort and just overall production. So I think they're going to hand the keys over to Kennard when they're not, exclusively going through Blake Griffin.
Did you know Luke Kennard has a negative wingspan?
Like his arms are shorter than his entire length, like his height.
Yeah, like his wingspan is shorter than his height.
Wow.
Yeah, him and Redick, both negative wingspan.
Damn.
How crappy is that for basketball?
They're the
It's like
only.
the one sport where you actually need like massive wingspan.
Are they the only ones in the NBA?
They're like definitely some of the few.
I think the first guy they brought this up with was Rafael Araújo when he first got drafted. I think that's where the term alligator arms started, right?
Oh man, I don't know, but what, that's a bad memory. I thought you wanted to live up Raptors' praise this year, not freaking kill it.
Hey man, to live up the praise, you sometimes have to go back in the past and relive the horrors.
Just gonna remember the old days.
Absolutely.
That's rough. Kennard should be really good this year. I've always been high on him since he got drafted, so I'm obviously a homer for Detroit. You know, he's a good shooter. He just needs his looks and to be more consistent.
Yeah, and I think as he improves in handling the ball more often, he'll get to the free throw line more often. His point totals will go up, just getting free points like that. And, you know, maybe playing with Derrick Rose will get them in transition more and get more open looks on the wing.
Other than Blake, who's obviously going to handle most of the offense, and Andre Drummond, who's obviously a major focal point, where would you put Kennard as, like, the third or fourth option?
I think he has to be the third option if they actually want to improve their overall outlook and improve their ceiling, because you can't really rely on Derrick Rose to play more than 50 games. And then Reggie Jackson has shown that he's not.
50 games?
50 games, that's harsh.
Come on, man.
That's the truth.
How many games do you think he played last year?
I'm going to say 55.
I'll say 60.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, this has backfired on me. Last year, he played 51 games.
Well, there you go. And everyone remembers that he had such a hot start hitting all those three-point shots, and then the rest of the year, I think he was, like, the worst three-point shooter in the NBA percentage-wise from, like, January onwards. So he just doesn't have the legs for it, man.
Remember when he had his 50-point game last year?
Yeah, against Utah of all teams, too.
Yeah, it was wild. Mm-hmm. So crying on the floor.
Everything, man. I worked my ass off, bro.
Great.
Peter's crying on his couch.
Kind of am, man. I love Derrick Rose.
Yeah, everybody loves Derrick Rose. Like,
all right. Anything else on Luke Kennard? Or shall we move on? All right. Well, I guess that's my cue. My pick for someone whose island I gotta stick with is, all right, guess this guy. His nickname on Basketball Reference is E-Man, or this will give it away, Moody.
Emmanuel Moutier?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
My guy, Emmanuel Moutier. He's been in the league for, what, 5 years so far? Last year on the Knicks, he had a career high in points at 14.8. Shot a pretty good field goal percentage at around 44-45%. He's finally getting into his system. He's a really good defender. He's lengthy. Signed a nice contract with Utah. And by nice, I mean a veteran minimum contract with Utah. But at least he's still around. He's obviously not going to be like a major focal point, but he can really help the bench just carry on that defensive presence that they're going to need.
Yeah, I honestly, that's a good pick. I think, just looking at the Utah team, who's kind of transformed their entire team this offseason, like, I think that's a great player who fits their system. And they need the depth at the point guard position. And in New York, like, he put up good numbers for, like, almost playing, like, 30 minutes a game. Like, he shot the ball pretty well. Like, he was a pretty consistent player in his role, and he's not no starter in the NBA, but I think he can provide really good minutes, so I can see why you're high on him. I think that's just a solid pick.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, Moutier had his moments last year, and his shooting started to improve. He started making better decisions off the pick and roll, and, you know, in Utah, he's gonna have good coaching and a competitive environment for once, so that'll be nice.
Not for once. Okay, he was, like, Denver was competitive when he was there, let's be real.
Yeah, competitive-ish.
Yeah, like, playoff contender competitive.
Playoff bubble team.
Yeah, but now he's going to be in the thick of things, and he's going to actually have competition for the backup point guard spot with Exum coming back, too.
Yeah.
So, that'll be interesting to see who wins out that spot, or if they just play together and just, like, you know, blitz teams when they come off the bench and just put as much pressure as possible on the backup guards, which would be interesting.
Imagine those two with, according to 2K, third best shooting guard in the league, Donovan Mitchell. But on the real, though, that backcourt between Moutier and Exum would be a beast defensively. Like, they would just
plus they got Gobert back there, so they can play up on guys and take away the three-point shot and just lead those guys into Rudy Island. So,
yeah.
Speaking about islands.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like Moutier's game. I mean, as a backup point guard for that amount of money, I mean, that's value right there. So even if he doesn't play that much to start out the year, if Exum ends up beating him out for this, you know, backup point guard spot, eventually Mike Conley's going to sit out games, whether it's for, you know, load management or he gets injured. So having Moutier back there, an improving point guard with a really good coach, that might turn out to be, you know, situation where they re-sign him in the offseason to like a longer deal if he shows out well.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the coaching and just the general environment. Like, this team is full of a bunch of veterans, right? Like, there's no one that's young that they're really reliant on other than Donovan Mitchell, and who's proven himself to be like a true professional, as like cliche as that is. Otherwise, you got guys like Ekpe Udo still on the team. Rudy Gobert is there. Mike Conley is there. Bojan Bogdanovic, like, these are all guys who know what they're doing in the league, right? They're guys that they will set, like, a good example for, not just a good example, but show him, you know, you got to take practice seriously, you got to eat healthy, you got to do this and that to, like, to maintain a strong career, which is probably what he needs.
And that's something he didn't have at Denver with...
Or New York. It goes both ways, right?
Yeah, like, he had his opportunity to play through his mistakes until now, but... Now, if he makes mistakes, he's not going to play. So it's going to be a nice environment for him to be in, because he knows that if he doesn't play to his role and tries to do more than what they ask of him, sort of like what, you know, he sort of had to do with the Knicks, obviously, but he plays that sort of way where he's like handling the ball all the time in Utah's system. It's just not going to work. So he's going to have to really do whatever Coach Snyder says, or else he's going to be glued to the bench.
Exactly. Got to keep him moving. Mm-hmm. All right, Rajan, who you got next?
All right, well, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to name a player that I'm not so high on. And this is a player that's not really a top three player on his team. But if you want, do you want me to let you guys guess, or do you want me to just spill the beans?
Let's guess. It's a little fun.
All right, so this is a player who's kind of changed positions a few times, or had different roles on his team. Plays in the East, a younger player. He's only like 23 or 24 years old, came out of Duke. He had an NBA body coming into the league. He was drafted.
Oh, no way you're low on this guy.
Yeah.
Really?
Let's spill the beans, Peter.
Oh my God. Is it the Chief Justice?
Yes.
Wow,
I am low on Justice Winslow.
Wow.
This year, I don't think he's a bad player, and I'm not saying he's gonna have a bad NBA career. Like, he's still really young, and considering he's been in the league 4 years, he's actually done well in terms of just like shooting the ball well, and he's had a variety of different roles on Miami. But the thing that really worries me about him playing in Miami is, I feel that Butler's really going to take over a lot of his responsibilities on the team. And I just don't know where he fits in on that roster. Like, he doesn't do anything particularly better than another player on that team. He's kind of like your all-around man, playing like the small forward position, maybe the power forward. But I don't think he's going to have a great year in terms of stats, and I really wonder how that fit is going to work with Butler, because I could see Butler obviously doing a lot of the ball handling and Winslow kind of having to do a lot of work off the ball. And I don't think that's some of his, like, that fits his strengths.
Wow. That's the complete opposite for me, because I had him on my island list. I'm still with it, man.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe you don't like what he's going to do. He's gonna have a real position this year. Like, in the past, the issue has been, like, especially last year, it was sort of just playing it by ear and letting these guys just do whatever they got to do out there. But now that Jimmy Butler is the top dog on this team, there's no questioning about it. So Justice Winslow can now just be a solid defensive player and just work on his shot. He's going to get a lot of open looks with Butler taking on so much attention now. Whereas last year, like, who did you have? Josh Richardson to take on pressure for you? I think Winslow is going to prosper this year.
Yeah, when Winslow actually played point guard when Dragic was out, he really improved his playmaking game, which everyone thought he was going to be like a stretch type of four player, but then he went and played point guard. So he's very, you know, multidimensional with his game. And his three-point shooting in terms of his attempts, went from like 1.9 to 3.9 last year, which is a big improvement. He stayed at the same percentage at 38%. So even though his shot doesn't look the greatest, you know, he's improved. And I think he's one of only three guys in that team that's like guaranteed to be in their crunch time lineup with him, Butler, and Adebayo. The other guys, you know, I guess it depends on who's playing well that night. But I think most teams in the NBA want a guy like Winslow. I think that he's basically what everyone wanted MKG to be coming into, you know, into the NBA. To where, like, he actually improved his shot, unlike MKG, in his first couple years in the NBA. And I think, like Peter said, he's only going to get better.
Yeah, MKG's shot got worse in the years in the league, whereas Winslow's have gotten better.
Yeah, I just see that Butler taking over a lot of, like, I think some of the best attributes that Winslow did. I feel like Butler is going to take over that, in the sense that I think Winslow is a good NBA player. I just don't see the fit so well in this team, mainly because, like, Butler is considered, like, he's not, like, he's a good scorer. Like, he can rebound, he can play defense. He's kind of like your all-around man as well. He's not, like, just the scorer like Kevin Durant, we kind of like to refer to, or, like, a scorer like Kyrie. But he's not, like, I just feel that they're really similar players in terms of what they give to your team. And I do think he'll play. I just don't think he'll have as good of a season as maybe as you guys are making it out to be.
I see him more as a Swiss Army knife. I mean, when Whiteside went down in the playoffs, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago against the Raptors, Winslow played center. So, I mean, a guy who's played center in the playoffs and then crazy point guard last year, the guy just does a bit of everything. You know, he's not, like, great at one specific thing besides defense. I think that him being, like, a third type of ball handler, maybe secondary ball handler, and their starting lineup in the Eastern Conference is not that bad. I think he'll get his opportunities. Like, he'll be a guy that plays more than 35 minutes a night.
Oh, yeah. I like him more in that he doesn't have to take on, like, various roles anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to be the primary option.
Like, he's going to be as he did. Small forward on this team.
I think it'll be more
point guard.
Defined. Yeah, or point guard if they're just tired of Dragić, which happened a lot last year, surprisingly.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they can do with that team, and I think they're, you know, a prime trade candidate, obviously, with Chris Paul rumors. So, I mean, you get Chris Paul in the mix there. You have four guys that you can rely on in the starting lineup, and then the last spot, it's, you know, whoever's playing well, like I said, or whoever's shooting well.
True. All right, Josh, give us somebody good.
Do you want good, or you want guys whose island I'm not on anymore?
Let's hear who you're not on.
Yeah, let's go negatives.
All right, so I'm going to start off with Dennis Smith Jr. So he hasn't really had the improvement curve that I expected last year. I thought that he was really going to be able to take the reins, especially in New York. I didn't think he'd fit in with Doncic, which he didn't. But once he went to New York, like, he had all the opportunity in the world, and then guys like Moutier were outplaying him. And he didn't play as many minutes as I thought as well. He just didn't really look like he knew what he was doing a lot of the time, especially when he was, like, the primary guy. And it does take time for point guards to, like, figure it out, obviously. And he has all the talent in the world. It just, he might be one of those guys that just never gets it.
He has a lot of potential, though, no?
He has a lot of potential, but when potential doesn't actually turn into results, at what point do you say, okay, it's time to move on? Because, I mean, they signed Elfrid Payton in the offseason, so which one of those guys is going to start now? Who gets the majority of the minutes? Are they just going to split minutes? He hasn't really proven himself to even be, you know, above that type of level of... I wouldn't even see Elfrid Payton's like an average point guard. So a low average point guard might actually get more minutes than Dennis Smith Jr. just because he hasn't really shown that he's a great shooter. He's not a really great passer. He's super explosive, obviously, but teams are not going to allow him to show that off unless he proves he can hit a shot off the dribble.
Guess what his free throw percentage was last year?
65. Not very good.
Yeah, close. 63.5. For a point guard, that's brutal. I actually didn't realize how poor of a shooter he was until now.
He shot, yeah, with the Knicks, he was at 57%.
Yeah.
His attempts went up, but the percentage has gone down. That's also a sign that somebody's shooting is not going to be where it needs to be in their prime years. Like, free throw percentage is a huge indicator of how good a shooter somebody is a lot of the time. So
Yeah, wow. I was going to try to defend him saying that he's got, well, he's still really young. He's only like 21, so he's got lots of time to develop, but that shot scares me as a point guard. I don't like point guards who can't shoot, a la Ricky Rubio. It scares me.
Yeah, especially in the modern NBA, like, unless you're really playing with like an offensive like beast in terms of like Kevin Durant, like a pure scorer, you need at least to be able to put up like 12 to 15 points as a point guard almost day in and day out. If you're not putting up that production consistently, like shooting at least like 35 or at least 40%, 35 to 40%, then you don't belong in the NBA.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good at all. That's a shame.
He might be taking the Moutier route where he, like, you know, puts up less than average stats, and then once his rookie deal runs out, he's going to find that there's not a lot of suitors and he's going to have to take a position on a team as a backup and then build himself up that way.
Oh, man, that's sad. I would say let's move on to something happier, but I don't think... Well, this will be a bit better. This will be a bit better. My guy is a center in the West, and his nickname is the Swiss Bank. Anybody?
Swiss, eh?
Swiss Bank.
He's a Scala Bissier.
imagine I was down on him. That'd be so insulting. No, man, it's your boy Clint Capella.
Oh, wow.
How about that for a hot take?
That is very hot. You're not sold on Clint Capella, like... What else can he do?
He's 24. Obviously, it's funny when I read out these stats, you're going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Last year, he averaged a career high in points and in rebounds, 16.6 and 12.7. So his numbers are good. Obviously, his field goal percentage is like high or like mid-60s because all he does is dunk. But I'm a little concerned, not this year, but going forward, I see a lot of DeAndre Jordan in him and that he's a poor free throw shooter. Obviously, a little bit better than DJ, so I can't, like, completely knock him. But I don't, like, the game where you're just a pick-and-roll center doesn't really go very far. He's got butterfingers. He's also got stone hands somehow. Both of those shouldn't go hand-in-hand, but somehow he does. He's a good block, like, a help-side defender, so that's obviously good. But there's just something about him. Like, last year in the playoffs, they were playing Nene over Clint Capella. Is it the fit on the team? Is it going to get a lot less rebounds this year because Russ is there also? I think his points are going to go down. I just think he's going to have a bad year. Obviously because of the system or like the players that are around him. But I just don't see a lot of growth after this year. I think he's peaked at 24.
Yeah, he definitely might have. I mean, the biggest thing with him going into last year was... Mike D'Antoni said that he may not be ready for bigger minutes because whenever he plays, you know, more minutes, he ends up getting tired a lot quicker. And he played more last year, but you could see as like the season was winding down, his stats like really took a dip and just wasn't as active. And, you know, with Houston having to, especially on the defensive end, they were switching everything. So he was oftentimes guarding guards, and just having to do that all game does wear on you. So I'm assuming they're going to do the exact same thing this year. And if he's, you know, not able to keep these guys in front of him with their, you know, their defense as it is, they might just end up paying PJ Tucker at center a lot more often, especially when it matters.
Which is what ended up happening during the playoffs last year, too.
Yeah.
Or at least Nene and then Tucker instead of just Capella and Tucker. Like, the fact that Nene is playing over you is crazy. Nene is, like, one of the oldest players in the league.
Yeah, like,
yeah, that last possession they had against Golden State where, like, Curry ended up being guarded by Nene, who was entered into the game for Capella, made zero sense because they could have just played Tucker at center in that possession, and then Curry obviously lit Nene up on that possession. So,
Guess how old Nene is?
37.
38.
Yeah, he's 37. Dead on.
Mm. Happy birthday, Nene. getting back to Clint Capella, I think there's another side of the argument. Like, I think he's going to have a similar year to last year. Mainly because like Westbrook's on his team, so someone has to collect a few of those rebounds. Even though Westbrook's going to try to get his own rebound often. And I think because Houston play at such a fast pace, like Clint Capella's like built for this team in that respect. Like he's a little more mobile than most typical centers. And Defensively, I think they're going to have a lot of situations where Russ and James Harden maybe take a few plays off, and Clint Capella is going to have to do a lot of cleaning up on the boards on misses. And I think like he fits the team. I don't think he's going to take a step forward. Like, I think his game is almost kind of peaked for like what, like he is who he is this year. And I don't think he's going to show improvements in the next 2 or 3 years. I think if you can get like a production, like hopefully he shoots the ball better from the free throw line, but like, I don't think he's going to be a dominant center ever, like Jokic or Embiid. I don't really see that in his game. I can see kind of the comparisons with DeAndre Jordan. I just think that he's a little more mobile and his game is more suited to this modern NBA because he can defend better on the perimeter than Jordan can. So I don't think...
Jordan's also like 5 years older than him, though.
He is.
Young DJ was mobile as hell.
But I think he wasn't put in the situation as often as Clint Capella is.
That's true. Yeah, the old Clippers defense wasn't solely reliant on
like switching.
DeAndre going it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like Clint Capella is just like an oversized four. Like his body shape is not like of a typical center. Like he's just, it's like you took a three or a four and you just stretched him out. And I don't think he's gonna have a bad year. Like, I don't think he's gonna show a drop. I can definitely see him just having like no strides. Like, he might average a few less rebounds a game, like closer to 10, and like maybe a few less points, but I think overall he's gonna have like more or less the same year.
I think he's gonna average more points this year because you have Russ and Harden now, and all those guys are gonna do is run pick and roll all day. So he's going to get a lot of like offensive rebounds, a lot of putbacks,
but you have to catch the ball.
A lot of lobs.
Yeah, I think he might average like one or two more points at most, but I think he'll get less rebounds.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah, with Russ in the fold, that's just a guarantee.
Yeah.
It'll just be interesting to see come like game one on those free throw rebounds if he's the one boxing out and letting Russ come in, flying for those, you know, useless stats, or if he's actually going to go for it, or if they fight over it. Sort of like DeAndre did with Luka on that one play last year.
Yeah, and then DeAndre learned his role, though.
I don't know if he did, because he got shipped out pretty quickly.
Yeah, you're right. He learned his role in New York.
Yep, on the bench.
Exactly. All right, Raj, give us someone you're high on. Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon.
All right. Another player I'm high on, I think this year he's going to have more of a role, and I think the coaching system is going to be better around him. He's entering his second year in the NBA, if that's a hint. And he's had a coaching change. And last year, he didn't probably play enough to have as big of an impact as I think some player or some people were expecting. Plays in the West, probably going to have a much bigger role on the starting five. Less competition ahead of him. New coach. Any guesses?
I have no idea who this is.
He was a rookie last year.
Josh, you got anything?
Which conference?
The Western Conference.
Who the hell switched coaches in the West other than the Lakers?
Think about who the Lakers coach was and where he's coaching now.
Oh, so it is the Lakers.
No.
Wait, no. The opposite.
Yeah. So where's Luke Walton?
What the hell is
Luke? Marvin Bagley, right?
Giles?
Yeah. No, it's Bagley.
Bags?
Yeah. Okay. Like I think he's going to take a big step forward. I think in the limited minutes he did play, he obviously made like rookie mistakes, and finding himself on the court and finding his role was like every player goes through that. I just think that he really didn't play like with the starting five a lot, and his role wasn't clearly defined, especially with Bielitsa starting a lot of the games in Sacramento until really they made the switch over to Bagley later in the second half. I really think he's going to put up great numbers. I think he's going to be a lot more like involved in the offense, especially because like Cauley Stein's not on that team anymore. Bielitsa's probably going to be coming off the bench now. And their backcourt is probably their most dynamic part of their team with Fox and Buddy Yield. So I think in terms of Bagley really being the front core option, he's going to score. He's going to get, I think, do a good job. And I think later in the year, they're going to actually start playing him at the five potentially because they want to play fast. And I think with Bagley playing at the five, that allows them to play fast, still gives them versatility. And lets them play kind of the way the Kings want to play. I'm less high on Bagley than I am on Richardson, but I think he's going to have a great year, like a bigger jump than what most people are expecting from him.
The only thing with him, though, is like most rookies, he struggled on defense, and him at the five, they just bled points. But I see your point with, you know, Sacramento especially, they want to play fast, so playing him at the five just makes sense. But at the same time, then they signed Dwayne Dedman, which didn't make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, it's the Kings, so the Kings are going to Kings, you know. But, yeah, with Bagley, I mean, he reminded me a lot of Chris Bosh coming into the NBA, and I still think that he's on the same type of trajectory where both guys came in pretty skinny. They both showed a lot of skill overall, like off the dribble, especially on face-ups. And Bagley's shot was coming along in the second part of last year. I mean, his three-point shooting took a nice, you know, upturn from like February onwards. So if he improves that aspect of his game, he's going to be really hard to guard because he's able to, you know, body smaller, or I guess small forwards. And then for, you know, if he's playing the center position, which ultimately is going to be his best position, he's able to blow by guys. So I agree. He's going to be around a 2010 guy this year for sure.
So did you say 2020 or 2010?
2010.
Guy? 2010.
It's like 2020 guy, Jesus
Christ. He's not Moses Malone, that's for sure.
Oh, man.
But no, like, I also, again, just to reiterate, like, there's no, like, obviously they have Dedman in the front court, but, like, before the front court was very loaded, but I really see, like, him being, like, the established starter now on this team, especially because, like, last year with, like, Dave Joerger, there was a whole, like, controversy about him not playing enough and why are they playing Bielitsa and... this year, I think that's kind of settled. He's going into a second year. I think expectations are going to be high for him because he was a second overall pick in his sophomore year. But I really do think he's going to make big strides in his game, and he's going to put up good numbers, especially being the guy in the front court.
So our projected... let's go with the guys that finish the game rather than starters, because starters, like, who cares? So at the end of the game, we're expecting De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield on. No matter what, right? Like, those two have to be on. We're either Bogdan Bogdanovich or Harrison Barnes at the three?
I think it's going to be Bogdan and then Harrison Barnes at the four.
And Bagley.
And Bagley
Bags
at the
five.
Unless you're playing, like, a team with a big center. And then Dedman's probably going to play.
Yeah. Do you think Dedman ends up playing more than 25 minutes a game?
I think that's what he's going to average.
Yeah. Around. So Bagley should be in line for, like, 30 to 35 a game.
I think 35, especially because he's young. Like, and they obviously do play fast, but like closer to 35. Because last year he averaged like 25, and that was coming off the bench in a pretty loaded front court. Like, I can easily see him getting like eight, nine minutes a game more.
I like it. Bagley is a really good player. I mean, he was, what was he, number the third draft pick?
Second,
or number three?
Second overall, yeah.
Oh, damn.
He could easily be the second best player in the draft, too.
Really?
Well,
you think, I think so. You think if he develops the same way Bosch did, why not?
You think he has a better future, or could have a better future than Trae Young? Trae Young is looking mighty good.
Bagley's got all the tools to be your modern-day NBA big man.
Yeah, but Trae Young's also got the tools to be your modern-day point guard.
Trae Young is very small, though. And he was probably the worst defensive player in the league last year.
That's only because Isaiah Thomas didn't play very much.
That's true.
All right, Josh.
He's also got the disgusting haircut.
Who?
Which he needs to do something about.
Who? Trey?
Yes.
Oh, he just needs to shave it all off.
Yeah, just go bald.
Yeah, or like let it all grow out and braid it or something. Don't leave it in the middle, man. That's a bad idea.
Do some Kawhi cornrows.
Oh, that'd be great.
He's looking for that NBA shampoo sponsorship.
Get that man some Head and Shoulders, man. Yeah. All right, Josh, who you got next?
So for the player that I'm still on his island, I'm going to go with somebody which doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I still like the guy. It's Mario Hezonja.
I knew you would say that. Super Mario, I knew it.
I really have no stats to back up why I'm still on his island, but I've always just enjoyed watching him play. He has such swagger. And I don't know, maybe going to Portland and getting a lot more open opportunities with them needing guys in the 3 and the 4 now with Mo Harkless and Aminu no longer being there.
Uh-huh.
Who's to say that, you know, the beast, according to basketball records, is not going to take another step up in his development. He's still young, so why not?
How old is he now, like 22? 23?
I think he's 23.
Okay. Remember, was it him that dunked over Giannis last year or like in front of Giannis?
Yeah, and then you stared him down.
Yeah, and Giannis said he would just punch him in the balls next time he sees him.
I think the very next game, yeah, I think he scored 0 points, so.
Oh, no, that was.
Not quite the punch in the balls, but you know.
No, that was definitely his highlight, was that single dunk.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was drafted, he was one of those guys coming over from Europe that we all said had so much potential and, you know, could shoot, could handle the ball, could do all this and that. And then it seemed like the first couple of years, he just, like, chilled. This guy was just happy to be in the States. Went from Orlando to New York, so you obviously see what kind of mindset he was in. He just wanted to like have fun. I'm assuming he partied a lot. I don't know, man. I wanted to be on his island so hard, but I'm teetering on this kid.
Yeah, that's a stretch. That's a very big stretch. I'm gonna safely say that all of our players, Richardson, Bagley, even Winslow is going to have a better year than Hezonja. I don't even see him playing. I don't see him playing that much.
I don't know. I think he could be a guy that plays a decent amount of this team for a team that actually needs like scoring at the 4 position and even the 3, really, if Rodney Hood doesn't show up half the time, which is typical for him. They just need bigger players on the wing in Portland, and I really think that he could eventually, maybe not the first part of the year, but as injuries happen or they just figure out, like, we just need taller guys. Like, the guy's 6'9 or 6'10. He's got long arms. And I think he's a decent fit around their guards.
Yeah, I think he'll get minutes. I just don't know how productive he'll be in those minutes.
Maybe he's the type of guy that just needs a kick in the ass, and Dame's one of the best leaders in the NBA, and he's a guy that's helped rehabilitate a lot of guys' images and, you know, games overall in the last few years. So who's to say that, you know, Whiteside and Hezonja are not next?
Dame's leadership is getting a hard heat check this year, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If he doesn't make the playoffs this year with that team, then, you know, people are not going to think that he's one of the best guards in the NBA, which he clearly is. But, you know, that's just the way the narrative rules, right?
True. All right, my guy, who I'm still very high on, he's been in the league for 4 years, going into his 5th. Our fellow Canadian. Canada. Trey Mamba.
Trey Lyles, huh?
Yeah. I was looking for somebody. You know, Trey Mamba is a hilarious nickname.
You can add Mamba to like any name now.
Yeah. This is very true. DeAndre Mamba.
Dion Mamba Waiters.
That's great.
Oh, man. Anyways, so Trey Young, our guy. Last year, was it last year or 2 years ago when Millsap was down? Trey Young stepped into that starting role very well.
Trey Lyles.
Oh, man. Did I say Trey Young?
Yeah, you said Trey Young.
You said it twice.
Oh, my bad. Yo, Trey Lyles has the same shot. No, he doesn't. Anyways, Trey Lyles, man, he could be a good fit in San Antonio. Yeah, like I said, last year or the year before, I forget which, when Paul Millsap went down for most of the year, Trey Lyles just stepped into that starting role with Denver. Fit in seamlessly. Hit all of his shots that he needed to, carried a good portion of that offensive load before Jokic and Murray were like fully established guys. And then last year it took like a step back because Millsap played a bit more. Obviously the offense was more reliant on Jokic. So, you know, Trey Lyles sort of just like fell into the background a lot in Denver last year. But he's a good four, man. Like, he can shoot the ball. He could be a little bit better defensively. He's a little light for my liking. He's only like 200 and like, I don't know, 230, like 230 pounds for a guy who's 6'10". So he's pretty frail looking, at least. But he could do some damage in San Antonio this year. Behind Pop's coaching, you got LaMarcus Aldridge in front of you. So obviously you got like good leadership, good veterans around you. I think he could have a bounce back here.
You know, as much as I love Canadian basketball players, I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one. I think that he went into the wrong situation to help further his development, because I don't think he's going to play a lot, because he's very nonchalant, and his defense is not good. And if you don't play defense, you're not going to play for Pop for the most part. Even a guy like DeRozan stepped up a little bit on defense.
No, he didn't. Get out of here.
He was okay last year.
No, he wasn't.
He was okay.
You think Marco Bellinelli plays defense? Or Patty Mills? Come on, man.
They try. Lyles has never been a guy that really showed that he really, you know, cares on defense, especially when he's not getting the ball. And the other thing was his three-point percentage went down from 38 to 26% last year.
Yo, it's
just a
blip. That
might be a product of not playing as much and not playing in games consistently over the course of the year, but that's, you know, pretty disheartening.
Peter's just trying to get a bunch of players on Denver to say that they're going to do better outside of Denver, or that at least once played on Denver.
Yo, man, he could be good. All I'm saying is that he could have a really good bounce back year. I could see it happening. Not that he's not going to drop like 15 points a game, but I could see him going for like 10. 10 a game on maybe 20 to 25 minutes. That's all I'm asking for from the kid.
I kind of agree with Josh here. I see it the other way. I think San Antonio has a lot of players that are like not your first, second, or third option, but a lot of like fourth to fifth options, and they have like four or five of those guys, especially with DeJounte Murray coming back. And then you have Derek White, who's probably going to be a bench player. You have obviously like you just have a lot of players that are good role players on San Antonio, and I don't know if Lyles is going to be able to come in and be guaranteed like the 15 minutes he needs to put up like 10 points. I just don't see it. Like, I feel like he's going to struggle to get minutes. I won't even be surprised if some games he doesn't play, and if he does, he's going to average close to like 5 to 10 minutes.
Ugh, man, you'll see.
We'll see.
You'll all see.
Like, let's just look at San Antonio and their pecking order. So you're going to have DeJounte Murray probably start. You obviously have DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge that are locks. They probably will end up playing a bit with Jakob Poeltl starting. And then you have a bunch of players who I think kind of fit that mold of like they have Brian Forbes, they have Derek White, they have Bellinelli, they have Patty Mills, they have Rudy Gay, Damari Carroll. Like, they have a bunch of players that might play over Trey Lyles.
Yeah, he's got a lot of guys in front of him, like you said. I think Poeltl's probably going to start because Pop likes to go big in the starting lineup. And then, as you said, like adding Damari Carroll especially makes me believe that Trey Lyles is not going to play a lot. Because Damari at this point is more of a stretch four than he has a three now, because he just can't move as well. And Rudy Gay had a really good year last year, which is why they re-signed him. Like, he was surprisingly really efficient. He's more of a four now, too. So, I don't know. Unless they're going to go like really small off the bench, which is possible. Unless Trey Lyles shows like Boris Diaw type of abilities coming into his fifth year now, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see it, unfortunately.
Oh, you'll see. You will see. You may not see it right, now. Though. You don't have that vision. That's why.
Hopefully he does, like Diaw. Because if he does, like, he's a Swiss Army knife. Like, he can do a bit of everything.
Indeed.
But except for playing defense. But
well, Diaw.
Yo, man, you got to look up Rico Hines' summer runs, man. Trey Lyles there. Lighting it up.
Peter had long off seasons, eh?
Yeah, for real. Raj, who you down on?
All right, so I have two, and I'm struggling to choose on who I really want to go with. But I'll let you guys guess. And let's see who you guys actually guess. They were both drafted by the Lakers. One got traded, one still on the Lakers. Still relatively young player, both of them.
It's Lonzo and Kuzma.
One of them is my guy, so I'm going to go with Ingram and Kuzma.
Yeah, there you go. Josh got it. Peter, 50%. Not bad, not bad. I'm going to start off with, I'm just going to say it, Kuzma. I think a lot of people are really like considering him to be, obviously 2K considers him to be one of the top 10 power forwards, and I'm still mad about that. That's maybe why he made this list. But I am definitely not like sold on Kuzma. I think he played well compared to the other like younger players on the Lakers last year, like Lonzo and Brandon Ingram, and he was a better fit than those players. But I don't think he played as good as what people are making it out to be. I think he's gonna I think he's almost reached his ceiling. Like, maybe he can shoot the ball a little better, but I don't know where his game is gonna improve. Like, what is he gonna do differently? Like, how is he gonna make it harder for NBA teams to play against him? And I really don't see him being that third or fourth option. Like, I think he'll be an okay bench player. I think he'll have a good NBA career. I think he's a good player, but he's nowhere close to being like a big three with LeBron and AD. Like, I think they're still missing that third option.
I think the one spot where he can really improve is his three-point shooting. Even though he has a really nice-looking shot, I think he shot like 31 or 32% last year.
30.
And that's a product of him having to handle the ball a lot last year too, but he's going to get a lot more open looks this year, and if he's not hitting them at least, you know, at a league average clip at 36%, then the Lakers may want to look in a different direction or, you know, trade him before his extension comes up with his rookie extension. But that's one area where he needs to improve this year, or else he may not play as much as Laker fans expect, and they might have to go with a different option.
Yeah,
I think I'm more high on Kuzma than you guys are. Because, yeah, like you said, Josh, if he can shoot, like, not even 40%, but shoot maybe 35 to 37% from the three, he's going to get minutes. Because they need people to stretch the floor on that team. You know what I mean? You're going to have Danny Green as your obviously like main perimeter threat. And then who else is there to really shoot? LeBron/AD? I'm not really going to be reliant on them to shoot a lot of threes. Especially LeBron in his like older age, man. He's going to do that old man thing where he just chills on the perimeter. Or if he's smart, he's going to start pounding the ball inside.
Yeah, Kuzma needs to be a guy that looks at a guy like Rashard Lewis. You know, his career sort of went from being like a high usage guy that wasn't very efficient to being on an Orlando team where he was being used more as a stretch four and, you know, being able to shoot the three-point shot at a high, you know, effective clip. And Kuzma's shown a lot off the dribble. Like, Lewis is very good in the post throughout the course of his career, and Kuzma has shown that he can do the same thing too, in taking smaller guys in the post or, you know, catching and going on the perimeter, which will be effective with LeBron as long as, again, he's able to actually shoot the three-point shot at a decent clip and make teams respect him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't know. I like the fit with LeBron and AD for him.
I think the fit is there. I just don't think the production that people are expecting like from him is there. Like, I don't think he's nearly as good as other power forwards that obviously 2K clearly thinks he's better than. And like, again, we're all saying like if he can improve his three-point shot, like that is a big if. Like, if he, let's say, continues to shoot the ball at 30%, I think there's going to be like bigger question marks. The one thing that's good about it is he was not afraid to shoot. Like, he kind of had pretty much like a consistent year in terms of his game. And he wasn't afraid to shoot the ball and take looks. And he seemed to be one of the only young players that on a nightly basis kind of gave LeBron some help last year. And I'm not saying he's doomed this year, but I don't think he's going to be the player that a lot of people are expecting him to be.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's going to be like, you know, the savior or anything. He's not, obviously he gets a lot more hype because he's on the Lakers, but I think he can be a valuable contributor to the team.
Yeah, but would you take Josh Richardson or Kyle Kuzma in that situation?
I take Richardson, but they're completely different players.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like people are comparing Kuzma's effect and disregarding Richardson.
Well, that's Lakers hype, though.
Yeah, that's easy. It's easy, right? To pick
like, Yeah, exactly. You just got to try to look past Lakers hype and just see him for the actual player that he is, right? Like, if by that logic, man, like, Julius Randle is going to carry the Knicks to, like, a championship. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
You can't just
fall into the hype of the big markets.
You never know,
markets.
Peter.
No, I think I got a good read on Julius Randle.
But you never know. I'm just kidding. Oh, man. But, yeah, I'm not sold on Kuzma.
Josh, who are you down on?
Well, my last guy was the other guy that Raj mentioned, which is Brandon Ingram. So, just to get into a little bit with Ingram, there's just something missing with his game. Like, he should be a really good defensive player just based on his length and his activity and his quickness for a 6'10 guy. But offensively, he doesn't really fit most teams and how they scheme offensively unless he has the ball in his hands. His three-point shooting hasn't really improved at all, especially on the catch. He has improved his range a little bit, but overall, like, if he's going to be a guy that's the secondary or third ball handler on the New Orleans team, especially if Zion later on in the year becomes more comfortable being like a primary ball handler, which is possible, I think Ingram's going to be the guy that sort of, I don't know, he's going to be the guy that's like the odd man out, I think, in terms of like who they're going to extend and who they're going to look at as a young player that's going to be on their team in the future. I think they're ultimately going to choose Lonzo Ball over Ingram when their extensions come up.
I would choose Lonzo over Ingram right now.
Yeah, I think the Ingram problem has to do...
That's a hot take, though, right?
It is, but I think the Ingram problem is, like, if you try to look at, like, what... Like, who would you say that Ingram should mold his game around?
Kevin Durant.
The 6'10 guy, like... Kevin Durant. Or
that, ideally, yeah, but
like let's
realistically,
say, what about like a Rudy Gay?
Yeah, I was gonna say Rudy Gay or like Tayshaun Prince.
Yeah, and I think the one thing with Ingram is like it just seems like you mentioned, like, I don't know what his best position is, and I don't know what his best game is. Like, he's not really an interior player with his size. He's not really fast. Like, he's not that explosive where he can like blow past people all the time and finish at the rim. He's not like the best perimeter shooter or outside shooter. Like, he's kind of like very average in most of the categories, and that makes him kind of an awkward fit. Like, how do you put him in a system and have other players work off of him? Like, he does everything okay. Like, not great, but not poor, but okay. And including defensively, like, he's not a good defender either. So I can, that's why he was on my list, the potential Whose Island that I'm not on. I also think his health concerns with the blood clots, that's serious, and that could affect his NBA career and his longevity. And he also doesn't seem to have like the real personality to really like drive forward and make big changes to his game. It seems like he's very like nonchalant the way he plays and the way he acts, like, kind of off the court.
I think he just needs to focus on one area of his game and just become elite at it. So I think defensively is the spot where he needs to do that, because I think at 6'10", like, he's shown he can guard point guards. So if he's able to do that and guard 1 through 4 and be that type of presence, then he could be not a max player, obviously, but like a guy who makes like between 15 and 20 million a year at his size and his scoring ability. But he also has to take a step back, I think, in terms of his ball handling, unless he's really improved that over the course of the offseason, which is pretty unlikely based on his health. But he has a really high dribble, too. That's one thing where, you know, as a 6'10 type player, you got to have a really tight dribble like KD has if you're going to be a primary ball handler type. So maybe he needs to change his game from being like a primary ball handler to a guy that is the big man in the situation and catches on the go, sort of like Draymond, and makes plays as a secondary guy in that situation.
It's kind of difficult to tell a guy like this to take on, like, I guess more like role player responsibilities in that sense. He was like the number 2 draft pick, right, in 2016. So going into that, you would assume that guys at that caliber think more highly of themselves than to be like a Swiss Army knife kind of guy, which is what we're actually proposing for him to do. Like, to say that the number 2 pick should improve his defense,
yeah,
is... It's not something that's more that's gonna hit home with him, in a sense. You know what I mean? I think they're too big headed for it.
Yeah,
like, I don't think he wants to be just a generic player in the league. He wants to be the guy on his team.
Yeah, like I think you hit the nail right on the head there. Like, you're not gonna go to him and be like, we want you to be like a defensive powerhouse like Tony Allen was. Like, no, like, that's not who he identifies himself with. Like, in his mind, he's a scorer. And he showed glimpses of like really good talent in LA. I think consistency was an issue. And like I would say from the last, I think this is his fourth year in the NBA, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in the first 3 years, like I haven't seen the big progression in his game. Like, yes, he's probably become a better player overall, but I haven't seen like marked progression in his game. And maybe he does well in New Orleans, but I'm not really sold on that.
Yeah,
the other problem is going into a situation where they don't have a lot of spacing in their starting lineup. So if he's going to be the one handling the ball a lot with Lonzo Ball on the wing and Derek Favors in the corner and Zion on the wing as well, there's just not a lot of shooting on that team.
There's like no shooting.
So,
yeah, there's JJ Redick off the bench.
I think ultimately like New Orleans is going to decide between him and Zion at the four, and it's a pretty obvious choice just based on talent. Well, maybe not talent level overall, because Brendan Ingram is a really talented player. It's just Zion's the future there, so yeah. I don't think Ingram's going to be the fit of the three going forward.
Yeah, I also wouldn't be surprised if Ingram plays a lot if he's healthy. He plays a lot in the first half of the season just to like so that they can like bump up his trade value and then try to get something back from him, because like I just don't see them extending him, and I think they're just trying to get something back from Ingram.
That's
They're definitely one of the more interesting trade asset teams because they have JJ Redick, they got Derek Favors,
Jrue Holiday.
Lonzo is another candidate he can be traded, because if they don't really like what they see out of him, again, he has an extension coming up, so if they don't feel like paying him 4 years, whatever it's going to be, $80 million, maybe another team comes in and tries to, you know, swoop him away.
All right. Well, I am on my last player, and this is really going to upset a lot of Toronto Raptors fans.
Ooh.
It's Pascal Siakam, guys. I'm kidding. Imagine if someone didn't like Pascal's game. That'd be crazy.
Well, I just saw SB Nation posted an article saying, should the Toronto Raptors trade Pascal Siakam? And I was very confused.
Well, the answer is you shouldn't be reading SB Nation. I watch their videos all you want. They make good, like really high production work, but their articles aren't the best most of the time. Anyways, my guy is—he's not actually a current Raptor. He's a former Raptor. Your boy Josh, DeLon Wright.
Hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. I think I don't know. As a point guard, he's really good defensively, but I don't see any offensive talent there. And as a result, he doesn't have a good jump shot. He's a little slow to make reads. Like, I think he sees passes a split second too late for it to actually be, productive, I guess. He's not an efficient shooter. He's, like, a 43% shooter. Can't really shoot the three. He shot less than 30% last year. Defensively, he's great. He's a monster. He's long. He's quick on his feet. He's got good hands. But offensively, he doesn't do it for me. He doesn't pop.
You know, when he's given time to actually take his three-point shot, like his shot is very slow. But when he gets open looks, like he's actually somewhat effective in the catch-and-shoot role. And I think he's going into the perfect situation for him in Dallas, where he doesn't have to be a primary ball handler type. He can just be a secondary or third guy. And I think he's going to start this year with Luka. And I think that their games fit pretty well. Like, he can guard the opposing best player in the backcourt and sort of take the pressure off Luka there. And then just be a catch and go guy off the dribble, or be a secondary ball handler if the first action doesn't work. So even though I wasn't really a big fan of DeLon Wright's game in Toronto, I think he showed a few things in Memphis last year. In that he's, and I know we talk about Winslow, but he's sort of like that type of player where he can do a bit of everything, not anything particularly well, but he does everything pretty good.
I wouldn't say pretty good. I mean, he's a
He's like an average. He's an average at everything.
Yeah, he's not a negative. Like, he's not going to cause turnovers. He knows his role. He knows what he's good at, which is great. Like, he's got a veteran mindset at 25 or 26
years old. That's what you want on a winning team,
though, right? I totally agree. I don't think he's going to work well with Luka. If he had a better jump shot, I think he'd be great. But since Luka is going to be handling the ball most of the time, I want a point guard who can shoot. Why would you want a point guard?
Steph Curry for that.
Yeah, but you just said that he's going to be starting next to Luka, though.
I think he's going to be fine. I think his three-point percentage is going to go up with the looks that he gets. I mean, even a guy looking at like Maxi Kleba, who didn't really get a lot of looks in his first few years, and then with Luka, he got a ton of them, and he started shooting threes a lot more often.
Yeah, but
higher clip.
they're very different players, man. DeLon Wright takes forever to shoot.
So does Maxey. But, you know, the amount of attention that Luka and Porzingis are going to get, I think that DeLon's going to figure it out pretty early. Like, he's a very smart player, so I think he's going to figure it out early. Like, I have to take these shots or else I'm not going to play. And Carlisle's big on three-point shooting, so he's going to tell him, like, you got the green light.
Yeah, but he's also really hard on his point guards.
No, he is, but DeLon Wright's the type of guy that's going to succeed in his system, whereas a guy like Dennis Smith Jr. didn't, because Smith Jr. just wanted the ball all the time, and obviously he's not going to be that guy when you got Luka in the fold.
Yeah, I'm not comparing DeLon Wright to Dennis Smith Jr. in the system. My issue is just that he can't shoot. He's not enough of a threat offensively to do something.
Yeah, I think you're saying that, like, he just doesn't fit as a starter in that team, and I would probably argue that, like, he's like a borderline starter. Like, he isn't a starter on most NBA teams. Like, he's maybe a starter on some. And I actually have a question for you. Since you were so high on Moutier, but low on DeLon Wright, who's going to have a better season?
DeLon Wright is a better version of Moutier.
Yeah. Like,
is he that much better? I think Moutier is a better offensive player, man.
No way.
Yeah, dude. Hold on. So basically what you want to do is compare last year Moutier to last year DeLon, right? DeLon, once he got to Memphis, had green light all the way, shot less than 30% from the three.
Yeah, but again, that's just based off him taking threes off the dribble, which he's just not good at.
He was also playing on a bad team. So was Moutier.
Which gives him more leniency though, right?
I think if you put both of them in the same role that DeLon's going to play next year, I think DeLon would succeed a majority of the time versus what Moutier would do, because Moutier just needs the ball more often. DeLon Wright is not a guy who needs the ball.
Oh, I totally agree, but they're not in the same situation.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, but I mean, just in terms of, like, role definition, you'd rather have DeLon Wright as a starter, as, like, a secondary type guy who plays really good defense on the wing, and when he gets the ball, like, he just either gets rid of it quickly or goes quickly. Like, he's just... he's like a pop type of player, you know? Where, like, he just makes good decisions.
He is not a negative. Like, he's going to have a long career. He's one of those guys. He'll just be around on various teams constantly throughout because he just doesn't make mistakes very often.
Yeah. Like, you make him a primary ball handler, he's going to suck, obviously. But if he's only doing that once every few possessions, then he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, Peter, on the whole. I think DeLon Wright's going to have, like, I don't think he's going to have a bad year. I don't think anyone's expecting him to be, like, crazy good. I think he'll work and he'll put up, like, pretty good numbers. I think overall, like, he's, like I said, like, he's not really, like, a guaranteed starter on every NBA team. He's kind of like a borderline player. Like, he's really a good backup point guard on most teams, and I think he'll have opportunity. I'm not really sold on Dallas, as we talked about before, but I think he'll be okay.
Will JJ Barea or DeLon Wright play more?
DeLon.
JJ Barea is not going to play at all this year.
You don't think so? Okay, fine.
They have too many guys.
Will Seth or DeLon Wright play more, realistically?
DeLon Wright.
You think so?
Yeah, I think DeLon.
Oh, yeah.
I think DeLon Wright plays more, but Seth Curry closes games more.
Yeah, that's possible. And plus, we still have Jalen Brunson, too, who's really good.
Oh, yeah, true.
They got a lot of guys that just fit well with Luka, I think.
Yeah. Yo, DeLon Wright is making 9.5 this year. That's crazy.
Good for him.
That's not bad for what he's probably going to give you, right? Like, he's going to be a starter on this team, I think. And if he's effective, that's a $15 million a year player. So.
Yeah, if he's effective. I don't know, man. I'm not sold. I want my point guard, as I said earlier, my point guard to be able to shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you there, but I think that his percentage is going to go way up this year.
All right, then. We shall see. We shall see. All right, that's it. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.